So we're on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, which is a nice accomplishment that we've already gotten.
I noticed that last week. I thought we've done something.
Yeah, it adds up, you know, a bissel.
A little drop.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. It's a Yiddish phrase. A bissel after full of shizel. You remember that? So we're on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, really on the top of the page. And if you recall, we're talking about Rabbi Yeshua in our mission at the beginning of the second perek. Rabbi Yeshua accepts a very high-powered migu, which is called a peshas or a peshahitir, otherwise known as Ein Shar Shachet Lufanecha. And the basic principle operates in the following way. If I come over to you and I tell you something that you aren't even aware of, I tell you that this piece of land belonged to your father, I tell you that I took money from you, and you're not even aware of any rights that you have to claim financial payments. And then I say, well, I don't owe you the full amount, I only owe part of the amount. So in any event, the mission itself has Rabbi Yeshua in the case of Sod Zushal Avicha Hoysa Ulekachtia Heimena. This son belonged to your father, and I purchased it from you. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, but if there are Eidim that testify that the son once belonged to his father, then he's not believed. So then you have to have a shtar. And now the Gemara wants to know, for listening, why not the following case? Instead of introducing the father into the picture and karka, let's just talk about a regular case of halva. Listening, let it say in our Mishnah, quote, Mode, this is a fake quote, you know, a suggested quote. Mode Rabbi Yeshua, be Omer lechavero, mono levisi mimcha, uprativ lecha. I borrowed money from you, and it seems that the so-called malve in this case has no recollection whatsoever. So I'm telling him something that he's not even aware of. Uprativ lecha, but I paid it back. Shunemon, and he's believed, because once again it's a peshasa, a peshahitir. Why? Because the other fellow is not aware of it. The malva doesn't even know that there's an outstanding loan that's owed to him.
But it's being paid anyway.
But how do we believe a person to say, I paid you? Normally, when a person wants to claim, I paid up a loan, the burden of proof is on him, as we'll soon see. Here in this case, he has such a strong credibility, a basis called Hapesh Asa, because it's Ein Shar Shachet Lefanecha. There's no tefiah against him. No one's coming to this lova and saying, we'll pay back the loan. He, on his own initiative, and by his own confession, admits that he took money, but then he says, I paid it back. So if I come over to you and you're not aware of you know, you have some sort of big businessman, they don't know where the money's coming in and coming out. I knock on your door and I say to you, I borrowed money from you, but I paid you back. So the chiddush of our Mishnah would be that in such a case, I'm believed to say I paid you on a loan. Normally you wouldn't be believed to say I paid you on a loan. But now we have to ask the following question. If in this case he's believed, according to Rabbi Yeshua's principle of Peshas Peshitah, what happens now in the Sefer? If there were Eidim to testify against the Lova that he borrowed money, would the Lova be believed to say, I paid you off? And in our Mishnah, it says he's not believed. For example, the case in the Mishnah is, this karka was owned by your father, and I bought it from you. So then I'm believed in the Peshasa. But if there are Eidim to testify that this karka belonged to your father, then I'm not believed to say I bought it from you without a shtar. What about in the case of Alva, where the Lova says, I paid you back? Is he believed or is he not? So that all depends upon two categories of halvos. What are the main two categories of loans? Help me out here. There's milva be shtar, and there's milva be balpeh. So what's the fundamental difference between the two? In one case, where there was a shtar, the Lova is not believed to say parati. Meaning, as long as the malva is holding on to the shtar, he doesn't have the credibility to say, I paid you off. Because normally what happens when you pay up a loan, when the loaf repays the malva, what does he get back in return? It's like a...
He gets a stone.
He gets the shtar. So if the shtar is still in the hands of the malva, then the loaf is not believed to say parati against the malva's claim that you never paid me back. But if on the other hand it's the milva balpeh, There were no Edim. Excuse me. There was no shtar that was signed by Edim. Then, in such a case, it could very well be that the Lova is believed to say parat. And in our Mishnah, the Mishnah is saying that if there are Edim to establish the Chov, then he's not believed to say parat. So that's what the Gemara asks over here. Mishum de kabay lemisni seifa, since he wants to formulate in the seifa im yesh edim shu lava mimenu, if there are witnesses to testify that he borrowed the money, v'hu omer parativ, and he claims that I paid you back, eino nemlan. And the Gemara says that that's not true. That's not how we paskin. Why not? Because of a statement of a Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says, "Hakaimolan hamalves chaveru bi'edim." In other words, they didn't write up what? A shtar. So the malves is not holding on to a shtar. This is a classical case of a milv malpeh. Eino tzarich lefroa be'edim. He doesn't have to give back the money, repay the loan in the presence of two edim so that they'll testify. He's believed to say parati. That's why anyone who lends money, every malva, will be well advised to write up a shtar. Because if he doesn't write up a shtar, he will not be able to prove, well, let's say it this way, he will not be able to disprove the lova's counterclaim that I paid you up. Parati. So that's called Hamalves Chaver B'Edim Eino Tzorech Lefaro B'Edim. Now, Rabosai, the very fact that the Gemara uses the language Kaimolon, what does that imply? Are you following my question? What? How do you translate the words Kaimolon? I'm not getting too many responses tonight. Is that because of the lateness of the hour?
No.
Is that because my questions are not clear? I don't know, I'm getting a little nervous here. You know? But Kaimolon literally means what? In our language. We paskin. When I say to you we paskin like this, what does that automatically imply?
It's a suffix.
Correct, that there was a suffix about it. That there was a machlokas about it. If it wasn't an issue, then I wouldn't have to say, well, Kaimolon. You know, let's say I have a machlokas rav and shmur, Kaimolon ke rav, or Kaimolon ke shmur. It means that there was a debate about it. So I'm just trying to tell you here that this halacha, that the lov is believed in a milv bal peh to say parati, is not pashut. If there were no edim at the time of the halva, that's a whole different story. Then everybody agrees he's never to say parati. In fact, he could have even denied the loan.
Yeah,
and he has a great
meeting. I come along to X and I say, listen, give me 2,000 shekels tonight. I'll return it in 2 days' time. Right. He doesn't write up a store. He gives me the 2,000 shekels in cash because he knows that it's...
Right.
2 days' time.
It's urgent.
I come back and I suffer. I mean, you've got no witnesses to it.
There were no witnesses even at the time of the loan. Oh no, that's a dover posh. So again, Brian, there are two extreme cases here that are simple and undeniable. There's no debate. The one extreme is that he's not believed to say parati because the malva is holding on to a shtar. It's signed by two edim. The other extreme case where the lova is certainly believed to say parati is when there were no edim that even saw the halva. But in the middle, we have our case. What happens if there was no shtar, but there were edim at the time of the halva? So when you come over to Plony and ask for a 2,000 shekel loan, and he introduces two edim, and he says, "All right, I'm giving you this money in the presence of these two edim," what does that indicate?
That they're going to be the witnesses to it.
And he wants to add some teeth into his position. Exactly. Either those Edom or two other Edom. It doesn't have to be the same two Edom.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure that you have...
It's up to the borrower to do that?
It's the responsibility of the borrower to do that, not according to our Gemara here. Our Gemara says, Kaimolon, Ein Tzarich Lefroa B'Edom. But I'm just pointing out that that's only the final conclusion on a great debate. And it was a shita that said that since the malva was very careful to bring edim at the time that he extended the loan and he gave the money, Therefore, the Malva is basically saying to the Lova, don't even dream of denying this or even claiming that you paid up the loan without evidence, because I've got evidence that you owe me the loan. That's called a cheskas chiyuv. I think we've discussed this concept in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
A cheskas chiyuv means that the premise is, until we know otherwise, the status quo is that you owe me money if I lent you the money. And I have to aid him to prove that I lent you the money. And therefore, if you want to say parati, well, I brought two Adim to testify on the Halva, you bring two Adim to testify on the Piron. But Al Gemara says not like that. Al Gemara says, Kaimalon, the bottom line, the final word is, Hamalvas Chaver V'Adim, Eino Tzarech Lefroa V'Adim. So again, basically, just to summarize what we've learned is, the Gemara suggested a very good alternative for Am Mishnah, but that's only as far as the Reish is concerned, meaning a Peshas or Peshita, where the Lova would be believed to say Parati. But the reason why the Gemara rejects this possibility is because of the Sefer. It just doesn't square with the Sefer, because in the Sefer, the Lova is not believed to say Parati, and yet we paskin that the Lova would be believed to say Parati. That's what it comes out here. I just want to read to you a footnote here. He says, Dirak mishuma sefer, only because of the problem that we had with the sefer lo shayach l'shanos kain. The kaimulan amalvas chaver beedim ein sarach lefro beedim. Vaharei mishum hareisha atzma lo shayach l'shanos kain. Why didn't the Gemara have an objection even with regard to the reisha? Hare mevur bereisha shetam shenemanu mishum hapesha asar. Madu et sarach letam zeh. If Al Gemara says that a Lova is believed to say Parati against the Malva, even if the Lova has no proof, he has no Eidim, then nothing works out with that Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the reason why the Lova, who comes to the Malvin, he says to him, you know, I borrowed money from you, but I paid you back. The reason why he's believed is because of this super principle of Rabbi Yeshua called Apesh Asa Peshitir. Forget about Apesh Asa Peshitir. It has nothing to do with Apesh Asa Peshitir. If the Malva comes to the Lova and he says, you borrowed 1,000 from me, now pay me back, the Lova is going to be believed to say Parati. Why? Because the Malva has no shtar. He's believed to say, I paid you back, even if he doesn't have witnesses. So what does this have to do with Pesha Asa Peshahiti? So it's very strange that the Gemara objects to this possibility, the suggested alternative formulation, because of the Sefer. Yemyesh Eidim. Forget about the Sefer. The Reisha also doesn't make much sense, because the Reisha says that he's believed all over because of Pesha Asa Peshahiti. So that's a problem in this sugi.
You take a loan, the person should ask you for a check straight away. I give you a check and money in the check, and you give me back checks, how are you going to pay back the loan?
What do you gain by that? I don't know. Why is that different than cash?
I come along to X and I say to him, give me a loan, give me 10,000 shekels. But before I give you the money, give me 10 checks.
Oh, you mean like post-dated checks or something like that? I see. That's like a security. The only question I have here, Brian, I don't mean to be cynical, but if the guy needs a loan, I wonder what his checks are worth.
Yeah.
What he should do is, that's what my wife and I used to run a gemach, in the name of my wife's grandfather who passed away. His name was Binyamin Belz. And he was a Belzer also, but his name really wasn't Belz, it became Belz, the whole story. Anyway, so we ran a gemach, and what we found, and we learned it a little bit the hard way, is that you can't lend money and expect to get it back unless you have arivim. Mm-hmm. You have to have two co-signers. So if somebody would call us up and they said they needed a loan, we said, okay, but just get us two arivim. Now, I'm not sure how reliable the arivim are, because what happens is, first of all, you're a nice guy. You don't want to, you know, if the guy says, look, I can't pay you back right now. Give me another 6 months. So what are you going to do? All right, 6 months go by, still not paying you back. Then you have to run around and get a hold of the Arivim. That's also a tremendous hassle. And then the Arivim don't even remember that they signed the Arvus, you know? Anyway. That's the way it goes. Anyone who runs a gemach has to realize what the, you know, what the drawbacks are. For listening, says the Gemara, Aaron, are you with us?
Yes.
Page Yud Ches Amin Aleph. This Aaron, I mean, AA in this case, not AG, but AA. We're on line, what is it, 7? The first word in the line is Tzarech Lefra B'Avin. Okay? Velisni Moder Rabbi Yeshua B'Omer L'Chavero Mana L'Avicha B'Yadi. Let's cut out this karka business. Let's just talk about metaltel. Let's talk about chov, you know, money. Forget about karka. And I borrowed money from your father. Ve'chaltiv pras, which literally translates as I ate up a pras. Pras is a half of a mana. It means that I paid back half of the loan. He's admitting on the other half that he has to pay it. And the Mishnah is telling us, Shehu Neman, that he's believed. Now again, you have to add another factor into the equation here, because we just finished saying that a person is believed to say he paid back the loan. And if that be the case, what's the Gemara gaining over here? Here the Gemara is introducing a whole different variable into the equation, and that's Shavua. Why would this be normally a classical case of a Shavua? Exactly, Modem Miktas. So there are three Shavuas Doraisa. The Torah recognizes three Shavuas. There are Bonin Ed and a whole bunch. First of all, Ed Echad. So if I have a claim against you supported by the evidence of one witness, then you have to take a Shavua to be Machish the Ed. Number two is the case of a Shomer. So I gave you the safeguard, you're my custodian, and now the object is lost. You have to take a Shavua that you're not holding on to it, that something terrible happened to it, it was beyond your control. And then we have the case of Modeh the Miktas. Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh. And this is the first sugya in Masechet Bava Metzia. If you start from Metzia, Shnayim Oksa Betalis, the very first Lomdash sugya there, on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, is the sugya of Modeh B'Miktas HaTanya. And we're going to have a major chunk of that sugya right here in Ksubas. But before we get to that, now, this Lova is saying to the Malva that I borrowed from your father, and I paid back half. Does he have to take a shvua on the other half? Well, I normally would have applied the principle of Modeh B'Miktas HaTanya Yishava. But here, there's no claim against him. Comes along Rabbi Yeshua, and he says, HaPesha Asar, HaPesha Hiter. The Pesha Asar, HaPesha Hiter are so powerful that it replaces the need for a shvua. Let's talk basics. Why does the Torah impose a shvua? Well, wait a minute. That's in Modeh B'Miktas. But I'm saying in general, what's, you know, just on a basic level, let's say we were just children entering into a cheder, you know, we're 5-year-olds. Why does the Torah require Shavua?
Because we don't have Edom?
In order to give what?
To give
credibility. That's the key word here.
In other words, if you give a false Shavua, you're in big trouble.
Big trouble. Yeah, big trouble. So what's that credibility called in the Lashon of the Shas? If you translate it to Lashon Kodesh. When the Shavua adds to a person's credibility, that's called Ne'emanut, correct? Ne'emanut, Ne'emanus. So now, why does the defendant need a Shavua? Not in this case of Modeh B'Miktas. Again, I'm talking now basics. The answer is because there's a tvia, a claim against him. That claim is put forth by the Tovea, correct? How do you say Tovea in English? Not the defendant. The defendant is called the nitba. Who's the tovea? Nobody knows this.
Claimer.
The plaintiff.
Ah, we call him the plaintiff. That's the fancy English here. Okay, you want to call him the claimer? I'll accept that claim. That's fine. But if you want to polish it up like Daniil does, that's called the plaintiff. Okay. So the plaintiff comes up with a claim, correct? Now, let's take the case of Eid Echad, for example. It's not just a claim. What gives teeth, or what gives credibility to the claim of the plaintiff? He's being supported by the testimony of one witness. That makes his tviya into what's called a tviya chashuva. Tfiyat Hashuva means it's not just that out of the blue I come and I say you, you owe me 1,000. I've got some evidence, albeit I don't have the spitz, the real evidence. The real evidence is 2 witnesses, but at least I have some evidence. I have a witness, he's reliable, and he claims that I lent you 1,000. So I have a support for my claim. That lends a certain amount of credibility. Now the defendant says, well, I never borrowed the money. It's not true. The whole thing's a bluff. So now at this point in the seesaw between the credibility of the tovea, of the plaintiff, and the credibility of the defendant, who seems to have more weight of evidence on his side? The plaintiff, because he has an eid effort. That's called a tviya chashuva. Whenever the evidence on the part of the plaintiff, the tovea, is a little bit better, he has the edge over the defendant's counterclaim, his tviya is called a tviya chashuva. How does the Torah envision creating a certain balance here so that the scales are even? How does the Nitba make his counterclaim into a credible counterclaim? The answer is Shvua.
Does he? How come he needs that? How come one witness is worth anything?
Because the Torah says that if one witness came by to support the claim of the plaintiff or the Tovea, then the Tviya itself has support to it. This guy didn't just come out of nowhere. The Torah says it's not an automatic credibility, you know, from now until the goal line, you know, you don't get score for this, but you did get some points. Why did this fellow come out of the clear blue sky? Was he lying? We don't have any reason to believe that he's lying. So now it's not just my word against you, it's your word against the Ein Echad, who's an objective witness. That makes my claim superior to yours. You've got to somehow balance that. The Torah says we're going to allow you to balance that. With what? With a Shvuah. Same thing in the case of a Shomer. You took responsibility for my object. Now you're claiming the object is lost? Something's fishy. What happened? Oh, the animal got struck by a bolt of lightning. I don't know. You know what I mean? That's a little bit odd here. We haven't heard, there's been no record of lightning in the area in the vicinity for the last 3 months. What do you mean it got hit by a bolt of lightning? So once again, the evidence weighs in for the mafkid against the shomer, and the shomer's going to have to support his counterclaim as a defendant with what? With a shvur. And that's going to balance it out. Okay then? So now we get to our case. What's our case?
If a person's down and out liar, I mean, you'll dishwa as well.
Well, that's a sugya on daf hey in Bava Metzia, which I think you might be familiar with, yeah. Right? That's called chasher avamona, lo chasher ashvuasa. Even a person who will pocket someone else's money, he won't take a shvua shav. That itself is a debate in the Gemara. This one man Yamu says that chasher avamona, chasher ashvuasa, but we accept the other opinion. That even though we suspect him to be lying, he won't go as far as to take the shvuah. And that's the whole reason, that's the whole logic that underlies shvuah. Because if you don't accept this principle, that chasher avamono lo chasher ashvuah, so then the shvuah is meaningless. Because the whole reason you're asking him to take the shvuah is because you don't believe what he's saying. Right, the evidence weighs in favor of the plaintiff against the defendant. So now the Torah is saying, well, let the defendant take a shvuah, but what do you mean take a shvuah? He's a liar. That's why you want him to take a shvuah. So what good is the shvuah? The answer is lo chasher ashvuah. That far you wouldn't go. That's in the case of gzela. There's another case called a chamson. We're not exactly sure what a chamson is, but a chamson is someone who basically forces you to sell something. He actually pays you for it, so he's not an outright gazlan. And the question is, such a person, would he be believed with a shvuah? So the Gemara wants to say that since he paid for it, he might in his mind, you know, justify himself, come up with a horos heter, I didn't steal it from you, and if he, maybe he'll even take a false oath because he doesn't think he's stealing from you. That's going to be an issue. But now we get to the third case. Okay. Why is our case not a case of shvuah? Why does the Gemara insist that if Reuven comes to Shimon and he says, you know what, I borrowed money from your father, but I paid him back half, The Gemara assumes that in that case there's no need for a shvuah. Because again, every shvuah is predicated on what? Why does the Torah require shvuah? To counter against what? Help me out here.
Aid
is one example, but what's the general concept? Let's strip it of its specific applications. In pure abstract terms, a shvuah is always engendered by what? A tviyah chashuv. Here, in this case, there's no tviyah chashuv. Even more than that, there's no tviyah at all. Because the son is not aware of his father's business dealings. He never in a million light years would come over to this person and say, "You owe me money because you took it from my father." He doesn't even have an inkling, a dawn. It doesn't dawn upon him that he should be a toveya. There's no tviya over here. If there's no tviya, then the whole basis for a chiyuv shvuah completely falls apart. And that's what the Gemara is asking over here. The listni mode Rabbi Yoshua. Where does Rabbi Yeshua say a person is believed? Be omer lechaver manal avicha biyadi vehechalti pras. And basically, what he's doing is he's giving the son, right, the heir, he's giving him half of a mana. He's giving him a 50%. It's almost like he's giving him a gift on a silver platter. Because this person didn't even know that his father had given this guy money. He never had a clue that he had a claim against.
This must happen a lot in practicalities.
I didn't hear you. Practicalities, you say?
In the practical world.
Oh, in the practical world.
It must happen. A lot must happen.
For sure. Look, a person dies. A person dies, and he doesn't, you know.
You usually offer
the heir is the heir. Oh, I didn't know what you meant. I thought you meant the two parts to this whole. What I meant to say. Right. I'm saying what's definitely practical is that when the father dies, the son is unaware of the debts that in both directions. He might not know that his father has a debt that hasn't been paid. He might certainly not know that his father lent money and that money hasn't been returned. You're asking a different question. How practical is for somebody to come along and say, "Hey, I borrowed money from your father," offer that information.
How many people do that?
Yeah, if they're honest. There are honest people out there, Baruch Hashem. And the question is whether the Lovin, so far as he admits that he borrowed the money from the son's father, that he should be taking a shvuah to substantiate his claim that he paid back half. So the Gemara says, well, here's where Rabbi Yeshua steps into the picture. And he says that there's a concept called Lo Ein Shar Shachet Lufanecha, that there was no tviya against him. And the Malvor, I should say, the son of the Malvor, he has no idea, no clue that he has a claim against this so-called Lova. The Lova comes forward and admits it out of the blue by his own, as you say, because he's an honest person. Then he has credibility. That's called a peshasa peshahite. What I'm suggesting is we can even go beyond a peshasa peshahite. We have undermined the whole parasha, the whole need for shvuah. The need for shvuah is predicated on a tviyah chashuva. Here there's no tviyah against him. So why should he have to take a shvuah?
Can I suggest another svara?
Yes.
Sorry, I apologize, I didn't
depend on
before.
This is going to be ongoing.
But hasn't he got money going? I owe your father 50. He can just he didn't have to mention the mono. Your father, I owe him 50. That's because that's the mitzvah now.
Well, wouldn't that also come on the Peshas or Peshahitir?
It might, but it's not a Modem Mixus even.
Ah, you mean it's not even a Modem Mixus. So let's just think. I owe your father 50.
It's just saying that I borrowed 50, I paid back 50 already.
You see, I think in that. But he doesn't admit that he borrowed 100. He just says, I owe you 50. Yeah, so I think in that case, if I understand it correctly.
There's no havmin
even. Right, there's no havmin of a shvuah.
I'm meager even to have said that.
Correct. But the point of the Gemara is to say that since there's a very strong migu, which we call Pesh Asar, therefore he doesn't have to take the shvuah. In the case where he comes over and he says, I owe your father 50, that's like saying, here's a gift. I don't need Peshas and Peshahita. I need Peshas and Peshahita because once he admits that he borrowed 100, he should not be believed to say I paid you back 50 without a shvuah. That's called a shvuah modem and mitzas. Kamash Malan, the Mishnah wants to teach you that since he has a Peshas and Peshahita, therefore he's believed without a shvuah.
But he also could have said less.
Who could have said less?
He could have said, I borrowed 50. I borrowed 50 instead of 100.
Like, then they can't, that's already a shekel.
It's all originated from the woman coming along and saying that I was married before.
Correct. And we didn't know that she was married before. So she admits it by
I've got a divorce and I'm good.
And I got a divorce. Now where's your get? I lost it. So we believe her because of her Peshas and Peshas. Good. Now, at this point, the Gemara is going to introduce a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Chacham. Now, it's not clear exactly what the case is. The Gemara is going to go back and forth on this. But at least we can give the baby a name. What is the name of this machlokes? You know, every machlokes has to have a name to it. So the name of this machlokus is called Meshiv Aveda. In the most extreme case, but again, we're going to use this Meshiv Aveda as a concept. If Reuven comes to Shimon and he says to him, I found an object that you lost. So he gives him back 10 bags, and each one has, let's say, 1,000 shekel in them. That's very nice, no? That he gave it back to him. So the guy says to him, wait a minute, there was an 11th bag. And it also had 1,000 shekels. So you gave me back 10,000 shekel, but it was really 11,000 shekel. You're a no good crook. In such a case, called a Meshiv Aveda, he's believed, and he doesn't have to take a shvuah. Even though, again, it's a little bit like Modim Amiksas, in a sense, because he admits that he found this money and he has to return it. Did he return all of it or did he not? That seems to be, bless you, a subject of the debate here between the Baal HaVeda and the Meshiv HaVeda. But Meshiv HaVeda does not take a shvuah.
Because he could so easily not have returned.
Yeah, he could have walked off with the money. You know, it's like the famous case of the guy who takes all his life savings, puts it into bags, you know, and he decides he's going to deposit it in the bank after all. He orders a cab, and he's got this big, giant box full of bags and bags of money, puts it in the back of the cab, and when they get to the bank, he gets so fatumult that he closes the door of the cab drives off, and he didn't even remember to take the box after the thing. He comes home to his house, and he's totally depressed. He falls apart. Here's his life savings. Go find the cab driver. And like midnight, a few hours later, he gets a knock on the door. So the guy starts screaming at the cab driver that there's one bag missing. You schmanz, you nutcase. The cab driver did everything he could to return the money to you. So the Balei HaMusar give a mashal, you know, people complain to the Ribbono Shalom, you know, why do I have this, why do I have that? Like, you know, thank God that you have eyes to see with and legs to walk with and arms to... Anyway, so what's the machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? That's what we want to study.
Modem and Mixas only applies to Halvod, isn't it?
Well, Modem and Mixas would be whenever I admit that some of the money is yours and some of the money is not yours. So you claim, let's say, 1,100 in my example, and I claim that I paid you back the entire sum.
It's not a halvah. It's a mitzvah. It's a
right, but it doesn't. The din of modem and mixas applies whenever I admit that part of your claim is correct. And if your claim is on 1,100 and I admit to 10 out of the 11, then I should have to take a shvuah on the last as well. And now we have a principle called Meshiv Aveda. Meshiv Aveda doesn't have to take a shvuah. Okay, I'm just saying this as an introduction. Now, the Gemara says the following. Aliba deman. When Rabbi Yeshua says that mana le'avicha biyadi v'chalti pras. He doesn't have to take a shvuah. Who does that work out with? With which shita? I'aliba derabbanon ha'amri meishav aveda havi. Rabbanon are the ones who maintain that when an heir, a yoresh, claims money that belonged to his father, and the lova says, you know what, I paid back your father half of the loan, that's called a meishav aveda. Again, meishav aveda now becomes a concept. We're going to try to understand that concept. And therefore, meishav aveda, according to the Chachamim, does not have to take a shvuah. So the Gemara says the following. If Rabbi Yoshua is trying to teach us the halacha of Ein Shar Shochet Lefanecha, which means Pesha Asra Pesha Hitir, in the case of Mano Lavicha Biyadi Ve'chaltiv Pras, then even if the son, the Yoresh, would come forward with such a claim, he was the one who initiated the lawsuit against the loaf, against the defendant, there would still be no Chiyuv Shvuah on the defendant. Why? Because the Rabbanan hold that if someone is an heir, he's a Yoresh, and he claims money on behalf of his father, there's no need for any Shvuah here because of the Halach of Meshiv Aveda. Let's give a little bit of background to understand the logic of the Chachamim. Daniel let the cat out of the bag, but let me make believe I didn't hear what he said so I can work this out on my own. Why is it that the Torah says that Meshiv Aved, excuse me, that Moda B'Mitzvah has to take a Shvuah? We said that the underlying principle of a Chiyuv Shvuah is Tviya Chashuva. Well, if the Tovea has the support of an Ein Echad, Nicha, I understand it's a Tviya Chashuva. If the Nitba is a shomer and he accepted upon himself achrayus and he can't return the object and he's claiming circumstances beyond my control, this, that, and the other thing, he's got to take a shvuah. But what about Motiv Mixas? You claim 100, I say 50. Why do I have to take a shvuah? So the Gemara Bab Mitzi on Daf Beis says that there's a principle called Ein Ad Meis Panav Bifnei Bal Chovo, which means that a person who has a claim against him, and even if he's lying, it's very uncomfortable for him to look at the malva in his eyes, in his face, and deny that he took the money. After all, the malva did a great favor for him, and now he's going to look him in the face with chutzpah and say, what do you mean? I never borrowed any money from you. If he does say exactly that claim, he puts forward the claim, I never borrowed any money from you, he must be telling the truth. And then there's no Tviya Chashuva. Because Ein Ad Meis Panav Bifnei Bal Chovo. He would never have the chutzpah to deny the loan. Just give me no aid. But now, let me give you the following scenario. Supposing the Lova doesn't have the money to pay back. He doesn't have the chutzpah to look the malv in the eye and say, I never borrowed money from you. So you know what he does? He makes a kind of a compromise in his mind. And he says, you know what, let me pay him back half the loan. That much money I can scrape together. And that's not called ha'azaz panim. It's not such a chutzpah once I admit that I did borrow money from you, but I don't owe you the entire loan because I paid you back half the loan. So the Torah says in such a case, we suspect something fishy here. The very moment he admits that he borrowed money, that itself makes the tviya of the Tovea into a tviya chashuva. That's called Modu B'Mitzvah Satayna Yishova. However, say the Chachamim, that makes sense if the plaintiff and the defendant who are looking, facing each other, one against the other in Beis Din, are the malv and the lov. But if the plaintiff is the son, the yoresh of the malv, in that case, that's not a tviya chashuva. the lover would have no compunctions. He would not be inhibited or embarrassed or hesitant to say to the Yoresh, go fly a kite. I never borrowed money from your father. And therefore, if he on his own admits at least to half of the claim, that's called Meshiv Aveda. So again, when you have a classical mode of mixataina, where the Tovea, the Malva, is looking the loaf in the eyes and demanding money, and the loaf admits to have, we're afraid that maybe he's playing games, that's called Ishtamuti Kamishtamit. There, the Tvia of the Malva is a Tvia Chashuva, and hence the loaf has to take a shvua. But if the Malva is not here, he's long gone, and his Yoresh is standing in front of Bezdin and suing the Lova, in that case, whatever the Lova gives the Malva is a Meshiv Aveda. That's a gift gratis. There's no Tviya Chashuva. All the implications and the rules and principles of Eino Demeis Perov Teichova do not apply. That's the Shita of the Chachamim. Hence, in our case of the Mishnah, What was the claim of the lover? Mana lavicha biyadi ve'achalti price. Why is that called a peshas a peshahitir? Why is he believed? Because of ein shar shakat lefanecha. There was no tvi against him. Says the Gemara, according to Nachamim, even if there was a tvi against him, if the son claims you borrowed 1,000 from my father, nevertheless, the lover, although he admits to 500, denies the other 500, would not take a shvua, despite the claim of the yoresh, because of the halacha meshiv aveda. So whenever there's a yoresh in the picture, despite his tviya, the tviya does not become a tviya chashuva. There's no chiv of a shvuas modu mitzas, and that's called meshiv aveda. So the Gemara says you can't square Rabbi Yeshua with the chachamim, because Rabbi Yeshua says, when is the lover potter from a shvua? That's only when the lover initiated this whole process in Bezdin. And the malva never put forth a claim against him. I shouldn't say the malva, I should say the malva was long gone. But the malva's son. No. If Rabbi Yeshua is on the same page as the Chachamim, even if the Malva's son, the Yoresh, would come forward and initiate this court proceedings, and sue the Lover for money that's owed to his father, there would still not be a Shvuah. Because of the principle of what? Of Meshiv Aveda. So now we have another alternative. Who disagrees with the Chachamim? Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. V'i aliba de Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov rejects the principle of Meshiv Aveda. Ha'omar, didn't Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say Shvua boy, that the Lova must take a Shvua, even if there's no claim against him? See, this is what the Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth. The most extreme case to support the Lova of Meshiv Aveda is when there was no claim against him whatsoever. The Gemara assumes now that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, even in that extreme case, requires a shvua. Even if the Lova on his own initiative comes forward and says, I borrowed money, but I paid back half of it, he's got to take a shvua on the other half. In fact, what's the language of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? The Sanya, we learned in a Braisa. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer Pa'omim Sha'odom Nishpa Altainas Atzmo. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that the Shvuas Modem Mixus does not require Tviya. Everything we've been saying tonight is antithetical to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, because his position is that as long as a person has a claim and he admits half the claim, he has to take a shvua. Even if he brought that claim upon himself, his own initiative, there was no claim against him. That's called pa'amim sha'adam nishpa al pi tainas atzmo.
It's not called a kickback. If you come along and I say I owe you half, maybe you, because you're scared, they'll find out that you owe the half anyway.
Ah, you mean maybe he's afraid there will be testimony against him.
Maybe it's written in.
You remind me of the sugya of Moda B'Knas Potter. The Gemara says that according to one man, the Yomar, Moda B'Knas is Potter as long as there's no reason to assume that there are Edim somewhere lurking in the shadows. But if Ra Edim Mashmashin Ubahim, he saw that there are Edim to testify that he stole, I'm talking about a Ganav now, not a Gazlan, then Moda B'Knas Potter doesn't kick in, because the reason he came to be Moda is because he knows that there are two Edim around the corner who are about to come in. But in any event, beyond all those discussions, you know, my goal here is to just understand the logic of the Gemara. The Gemara is saying basically that the Shita of Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, the way you presented, cannot square neither with the Chachamim for one reason X, nor with Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov for reason Y. It can't square with the Chachamim because even if the son, the Yoresh, had initiated the claim, the Chacham would still insist that there's no Shavuos Modim Miktsas. And that's under the category, under the halacha of Meshiv Aveda. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would say that even if the son had no claim against the Lov, and the Lov would nevertheless have to take a Shavuah. And he's rejecting Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov two things. Number one, he's rejecting the concept of Meshiv Aveda. Number two, he's rejecting the Pesha Asar of Rabbi Yeshua of Ein Shor Shakel Lefanecha. And that's called, in the language of Eliezer ben Yaakov, the language is important, Pa'amim Sha'adam Nishba Alpi Tainas Atzmo. I can come into Bezdin, tell a story, and as a result of that story, I become Chayev in a Shvuah Doraisa, called Modim Miktsas. Even though there's no plaintiff who's suing me for money. Irrelevant. Ketzad, what's the case? Mana Lavicha Biyadi. I borrowed 1,000 from your father, ve'chaltiv pras, and I paid off half the loan. Hareza nishba, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he has to take a shvua. Vezeu, that's the case of shenishba al tainas atzmo. He came on his own initiative, confessed that he borrowed money from this guy's father, and he has to take a shvua. Chachamim omrim, the chachamim disagree. And they hold that he's a Meshiv Aveda. Eino Ella, Kim Meshiv Aveda Upotar. So it comes out that according to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, you have to take a Shvua even in the case where a person is Modeh B'Atzmo, Tainus Atzmo, without any Tvia, without any claim on behalf of any plaintiff against him. And that certainly can't work out with Rabbi Yeshua and our Mishnah because of the principle of Pesha Asar. And according to the Chachamim, your potter, even in the case where the Ben came forward with a claim, because that's called Meshiv Aveda. Because since the son has no personal knowledge, you know, he didn't lend this guy any money, he's just basing himself on what he heard from his father, that's not enough of a Tviya to create a Tviya Chashuva. And therefore, if the Nitba, in this case the Lova, admits to half, he doesn't have to take a shvua on that half that he admits to. So our Mishnah can't work out according to anybody, neither according to the Chachomim and neither according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Let's go over it one more time. This is bad news, because Rabbi Yeshua has to work out with somebody. Do you understand my point? He can't work out with the Chachomim because the Chachom would insist that even if the Ben came forward with a claim, it wouldn't make any difference. Since there's no, you know, the maize punim if they balchovo, etc., there's no chiyuv modu miksa tiny shava, and therefore the lova does not have to take any shvua of modu miksa. He's a meshiv aveda, and the statement of Rabbi Yeshua that because there was no claim against him on the part of the heir, therefore he's a pesha asa pesha hiti, doesn't have to take a shvua, that's incorrect. Because even if the heir came forward with a claim, the Chacham say, nevertheless, it's considered Meshiv Aveda, there's no Chiyuv Shvuah. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua can't work out with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, because Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov rejects the principle of Meshiv Aveda. He insists that there's a Chiyuv Shvuah, even al yidei tainas atzmo, when no one had a claim against him, clearly rejecting the entire principle of Pesha Asa, Pesha Hitir.
So, just to clarify the issues of the Chol.
I'm going to need a little bit of something to drink. I apologize. What happened was, I looked at my watch. I realized how late it is. So I ran out and I left my Heiliger Thermos.
What can I get you? Tea?
That's complicated because I need what's called... No, licorice tea I don't have with me because that's in the thermos. I need a tea that's called what? It's in the top drawer there of my thing. Should I take a minute and get it?
Please, I'll make it.
Yeah, okay. If you don't mind, right, just give me a cup of hot water and I'll get the tea.
The Chachamim.
Yeah. Daniel, you were about to say something.
Yeah,
right?
I just want to clarify. And it within this
London tea,
it's not cheap.
I was desperate. You know, anything you buy next door here, you can only buy when you're desperate. Yeah. Cameron.
Do the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Lazman Yaakov that theoretically there is a concept being made of this asma, but because of this, the logic of Ein Adam Meis Ponov doesn't apply, therefore we say it's Kameshim Aveda?
Could be, you're right.
The reason I ask
what case do you have in mind? That's
I'm going to think further. Because then what we're saying is we're almost being Dersh Tam the crime. If it's a halacha, the Raisa. The murder makes us Yeshova. Then how can you look? In that case, it's not made. You can't make that napkin in there.
The truth is that when the Chachamim say that Eino Ela Kemeshev Aveda Upatur, I'm not sure if that's a Doraisa halacha. I think it's going to come up a little bit later on. It might be a Takanas Chachamim. Because imagine if every time you return an Aveda and you're a good Samaritan, you're going to have to take a Shvuah at the end because the guy's going to claim, well, where's the rest of the stuff? Mm-hmm. Who's going to want to be Meshav Aveda? I don't want to be Meshav Aveda and expose myself to having to take a Shvuah.
It's almost like a Takanas Hashavim, Gnavim.
It's very similar to Takanas Hashavim, you're right.
There's no Chiyuv to be for a Shabbos Aveda.
Yeah, but you know, not everyone is gonna take this, you know, is gonna make himself vulnerable to a shvua. Oh, so the Gemara says the following: V'Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Lesle Meshiv Aveda Upotur. Are you telling me that according to your understanding of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, if a person admits that he borrowed 1,000 and he claims he paid 50, he has to take a shvua, what happened to Meshav Aveda? Now, if you take a look in Rashi, the Gemara in Gittin on Daf Nun Aleph Amin Aleph has a whole bunch of takanos which are called under one general rubric, Mipnei Tikkun Olam. Does that ring a bell to you? Yeah. For example, you know the din that you're not poda shevi miyaseh mitadei dveim. That's called mitikun olam. Well, for example, if the baal sends a get with a shliach and then he wants to be mevatel the get before the get reaches the hands of the isha, that's also completely null and void because of tikun olam. There are many, many different established rules by the chachamim mipnei tikun olam. Tikun olam means in order that society should function normally, and one of those rules is called Meshav Aveda. So the Mishnah in Masechta Gittin, which Kedai to see the Mishnah inside, I don't have a Gemara Gittin here, but the Mishnah in Gittin establishes that there's a Takanas Chachamim, that if a person returns an Aveda, then even if the Bailin claim that, you know, where's half of the Aveda, there's no need for Shvua. That's called Tikkun Olam. The Gemara assumes now, here in Masechta Ksubas on Daf Yud Ches, that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov could not possibly argue with that Mishnah. We don't know of any Tana that would question that premise of Tikkun Olam. And therefore, the Gemara thinks that we've presented here an extreme view of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that's untenable. And therefore Rav is going to rewrite the script here and tell us what is the machlokes between the Chachomim and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Omar Rav. Now the premise of Rav is going to be that when Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is Machayev Shvua, it's only because the ben, the son, is Toveah him. And there's got to be a Tviah against him. If there was no Tviah, and he, the Lover, comes under his own initiative to admit the loan, that's Meshiv Aveda. He would not take a Shvua. Because again, the Gemara sees an absolute equation between the following two scenarios. Scenario number three, where the Lover comes into Beis Din and he says, I borrowed money from this guy's father and I paid him back half. Here's the other half. And scenario number two, a guy comes into Beis Din and says, I found this object, gives it to the owner, and the owner claims, well, what about the other half? He doesn't have to take a shvua. That's called Meshiv Aveda. And it's impossible that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would deny the principle of Meshiv Aveda. Therefore, if a person comes into Beis Din and says, I borrowed money from your father, and here's the other half I paid back, that's called Meshiv Aveda. The Gemara has no doubt about it. So what was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov talking about? What scenario was he addressing when he said that there's a chiyuv shvuah? It can't be a case where there was no claim against him. If there was no claim against him and he, the lover, came with his own initiative, that's Meshiv Aveda. There is no shvuah. So when was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov yelling and screaming, let him take a shvuah? Says Rav, it's a case where there was a taina against him, but the Chachamim are going to say that that's not enough of a taina to be mechayev shvuah. They're going to equate it, they're going to see that taina as a non-entity, and if you neutralize it, you mevatel that taina, then you're left with Meshiv Aveda, because again, there's no taina. So we're going to look for a case now of a taina against the lover, but it's a very shaky, it's a kind of a Twilight Zone taina. We're not sure if it is a taina, if it's not a taina. What's the case? Bitano katan. Interesting. The father died, and in this case, the yoresh is a katan. Now, normally, in Beis Din, with all due respect to a katan, and he might be a genius, he's very precocious, he's the Vilna Gaon, I don't care, he doesn't have a status to create a tvia in Beis Din against someone else. And therefore, b'toed o'katan, the Gemara thinks that's going to be the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Chachamim, whereas Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov sees this as a bona fide tvia, a taina against the lova, even though it's coming from the mouth of a katan. And therefore, we remove the principle of Meshiv Aveda. Because Meshiv Aveda would have to be when the lover comes on his own initiative without any tviya against him. Then there's no chiyuv shvuah. Here there was a tviya against him. Because Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov validates the tviya of a katan, which again we're going to see soon is very problematic, but that's what the Gemara assumes now. And the Chachamim say that ma pitom, as we say in Hebrew, the tviya, the claim of a katan, is not a tviya. So for all intents and purposes, Alpi did, there was no tvi against him. If there's no tvi against him, then he's a Meshiv Aveda.
How would you feel if there's a mutual exact statement, but I'm sure on this about Altanas Atzmai? You talk about his dad's not Altanas cousin.
Correct. So the Gemara thinks that this is considered like a Tainas Atzmo, because the Taina of a Kutin is not a Taina, but it's enough of a Taina to remove Meshiv Aveda. And that has to be worked out. You know, the Gemara is operating with two different dimensions. But in any event, the Gemara rejects this right outright. It can't be that that's what Rav was saying about Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Why? And once again, we have a Mishnah. This is how the Mishnah is not in Gittin, it's in Shvuas. And the Mishnah says, Ein nishbain altainas chereish shote v'katan. The Gemara in Shvuas actually derives this from a pasuk. It says in Shmos Chof Beis, Ki yitein ish el re'eru kesef o kelim lishmor, and then the Torah says he has to take a shvuah, and a katan is not called ish. So now we're back to square one, because we don't really have any logically consistent view of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. On the one hand, if there's no tvi against him, then he's a Meshav Aveda, and even Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov has to agree. And if you can tell me whether there's a cotton who's being tovea, well, Tainus cotton could not be Mechayev Shvua, so why would Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say he has to take a Shvua? And you're going to tell him he's going to have to take a Shvua based on Tainus Atzmo, but that's a violation of the rule of Meshav Aveda. So the Gemara answers, you know what Rav had in mind when he said katan? He had in mind a gadol. So why did he call him a katan? V'amai kari le katan, d'legabi mili di'aviv ki katan hu. Again, this is all in the context of a tviya chashuva. A tviya chashuva engenders a shvua, chiv shvua. Well, what's the status of a son who is claiming money that belonged to his father? That's called Yesh Adam Shemei is part of Bifanov, Bifnei Haben, Velo Bifnei Ha'av. Meaning, the whole reason why the Torah imposed the Shvuas Modim Mitzas is because the Taira of the plaintiff is a Taina Chashuva. What makes it into a Taina Chashuva? Ain't on the maze panob if they bachol, because the lova would not have the chutzpah to deny this loan and look the mouth in the face. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that if you drop the ain't on the maze panob if they balchovo, then in such a case there would be no tviya chashuva. Would the principle of ain't on the maze panob if they bachov apply to the ben? He didn't lend any money to the lova. Says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, you know what? It would be a chutzpah neira, ha'ozas panim, for the lova to look at the son in the eyes and say to him, I never borrowed any money from your father. Is memela? That becomes a taina chashuva. What makes it into a taina chashuva is the ein on the meis panim b'fnei balchova, which according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov applies even in the case of the ben, as long as he has a tviya. He has to be a gadol in order to have a chalushem tviya. The chachamim say, no, there's no ein on the meis panim b'fnei. The tviya is not a tviya chashuva. Therefore, he's a meishav aveda, and there's no chiyuv shvua. Let's see if it fits into the Gemara's language. The Gemara says the following: Vamai kari le katan, d'legabi mili di aviv ki katan hu. The Gemara says, then, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the reason why the lova has to take a shvua in this case is because of the tviyas haben, and the ben is now a gadol, so he has a tviya. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov now activates the principle of Eino Demez and Panim Fnei Vachov, and if he's mechayev a shvua, if that be the case, Ihochi Tainas Atzmo, Tainas Acherim Hi. It's not that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was saying that Lefa'amim Adam Nishbal Pi Tainas Atzmo. No. The reason for the Skri of Shvua is because there's a Tainas Acherim. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov validates the Taina of the Gadol, who's like a cotton because it's Benichse Aviv, and therefore it's a case not of Tainas Atzmo, but of Tainas Acherim. The Gemara answers, you know what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov had in mind? Tainas Acherim v'hodas Atzmo. Now this doesn't make any bit of sense. What do you mean Tainas Acherim v'hodas Atzmo? That's exactly when you chayev shvuas modim v'mikta. You know, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov wants to say, well, there was no Taina other than Tainas Atzmo, and therefore I have a chiddush to tell you that he still Aval Pichain has to take a Shuas Modem Mitzas. Here's a case where there is a Taina against him. But what? He admits half the Taina? That's exactly what the Torah has in mind by Modem Mitzas. The Gemara says, Kulo Tadnasa, Taina Sacherim, Vodas Atzmo. In every single case, it's going to be Taina Sacherim, Vodas Atzmo. And the Torah says, you have to take a Shvuah. And not only that, the Chachamim would not disagree in the case of Taina Sacherim, Vodas Atzmo. Ella says the Gemara, Hachabit Rabba Kam Miflagi, what's the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim? The Omar Rabba, Vipnei Ma Omer Torah Moda Mixatani Yeshova, Chazokain of the Maid's Ponim Vipnei Balchovo, Bakulo, hi Bakuli boy, the Lifgre, he really wanted to deny the Alchov, he doesn't have the money, but hi the Lokofer, why didn't he have the chutzpah to deny the Alchov Mishum Shaino the Maid's Ponim Vipnei Balchovo? Oh, so if that be the case, Bakule boy, he deluded late. So why do you admit on the whole thing? He must be telling the truth. Haidelo odele ki hechid nishtamit le. He's mishtamutik mishtam. He's trying to push him off. Sovar adahavi li zuze uperani le. I'll pay him back when I get the money. So Rachmana Amar Rami Shvua le has to take a Shvua ki hechid lodele bekule. So admit on the other half. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov sovar lo shna bo lo shna bno eino meiz hilchoch lav meishav avei the Rabbanin savri who the eino meiz alv bibno. Maize, the middle of maize, meshiv aveda. The whole issue is whether any other maize applies to the ben. Our Blinetta will go over the last part because I was in a little bit of a rush. Okay.